Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The game was way too physical. I thought it was a little lopsided in its physicality. And I thought that, you know, it was bound to happen. It just felt like it was coming.
That was the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, Chris Finch, talking about the physicality last night between the Pistons and the Wolves. The Wolves won the game, but everybody's talking about the melee brawl, however you want to kind of categorize it or describe it. Joining us now, a guy that played during NBA times when it was really physical, none other than former Gopher, NBA champion Trent Tucker, joining us here on the John Schutzcall Banker Hotline. Double T, I'm appreciative of your time. I know that you're traveling and you're busy out there on the hockey scene, but did you see the entire footage of what took place at Target Center last night? And if so, your thoughts?
I did. You know, a little scuffle, nothing too big. Only thing that's bad about it, when the players fell into the stands, and that's when, you know, somebody can get hurt from that standpoint. But, you know, I saw the foul by the guy from Detroit, and it seemed like Naj Reid kind of elevated the situation.
Agreed.
I don't know what took place before that, but from what I saw on TV, I felt like that he elevated the situation, and I don't think he was really fouled that hard.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Double T. Me and you are on the same page. It was not an aggressive foul. It was just a common foul. Nas took issue with it. He started the finger wagging and went from there. But the reason why it was boiling to that point. So there were like two possessions before. The possession on the Wolves' end ended in a foul. And Dante DiVincenzo was on the ground, and Isaiah Stewart, who likes to start stuff, shoved Dante DiVincenzo, and he should not have. He should have kept his hands to himself. It started some words back and forth. There were some issues there, and so it just kind of was bubbling over.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that then. Yeah.
So now, we look at that. Before we move forward, what happened after that foul and what happened and led to both teams going at it and it spilling over, let's go back to when you played. Like, when you played the game, it was super physical. You know, we're talking about they came up with Jordan rules, right? We had the Bad Boy Pistons. We had all kind of stuff. The NBA is a much different place than it was back when you played. Back when you played, who would you say were the teams that were the most aggressive teams physically in the NBA? We know the Pistons were one of them. Who were the other couple of teams that you would say were super aggressive?
Probably the Boston Celtics were one. And I would have to say probably the Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay, so how would you rate, when you were with the Knicks, how would you rate the physicality of the Knicks?
We were physical too. We had to be, because our coach instilled in us at playoff time there were no layups.
Mm-hmm.
Now he was saying, "I'm not telling you to hurt somebody or try to end their career, but no layups. So however you prevent the guy from making the layup, you have to do that. If you don't, he was going to fine us $5,000."
Really?
That's what he told us. Now whether he was going to go through with it or not, or carry that out, we don't know. But just the threat of a coach telling that he's going to fine you $5,000 if a guy made a layup. I mean, that sent the message home to us very quickly. But a situation like what – now, like I said, I didn't see what took place before Naj Reid, you know, did the finger wagging, but a foul like that, you know, back 25, 30, 40 years ago was just a common foul.
Yeah, and I believe it's still a common foul. I do agree with you 100%. I feel like Naj really took it and just took it way too far. It was nothing that he should have got upset or blown out of proportion, because that's what he did. He blew the entire situation out of proportion. But Double T, the other part to this that I wanted to bring up was when you look at the Wolves and the way that things have kind of went with the Wolves the last, I don't know how many years. I started the show off tonight stating that although I'm not promoting violence, I don't want anybody to hurt, I'm not trying to promote guys fighting, whatever, I do like the fact that the Wolves kind of stepped up and put their foot down and said, we're not going to be bullied. Because leading up to that play, Isaiah Stewart was trying to bully the Wolves, and he's tried to do that with other teams throughout this year, in the last couple of years, actually. He did the whole running and chasing after LeBron James and stuff a couple of years ago, whatever. And then I know Ron Holland had some words with people leading up to this. So I just like the fact that they stood up for themselves, because too many times throughout the years, the Wolves have looked like they're soft. Whether it was last year where Rudy's getting choked by Draymond Green, whether it was the year before where we've got Joel Embiid, he's on the bottom of a pile and he's choking out and got Karl Anthony Towns in the headlight. I don't want to see any more of that. I think that the toughest guy on the Wolves is the skinniest guy, and that's Jaden McDaniels, because he's kind of got a short fuse. But I like the fact that at least one night they stood up and said, no, enough of this.
Well, you have to. I mean, also you have to protect your teammates on the floor. And, you know, you can't let somebody just walk all of your teammates or give somebody, you know, a cheap punch from behind and not do anything about it. That's why you're a team. And as you get ready for playoff basketball, we all know that the game is going to be a little bit tougher. It's going to be a little bit rougher. So now you really have to come together as a team and protect one another.
Yeah, we're talking to Trent Tucker here on the Lake Show News Talk 830 WCCO. If I said that people described the Minnesota Timberwolves as soft, what would you say?
I would say no. I don't think they're a soft basketball team. You know, they might be a finesse team more than they need to be. It's because they have guys who can, I believe, play a physical style. But they fall in love with a three-point shot sometimes too much. And that can proceed for them to be a soft team. But I don't think overall that it's a soft basketball team.
Do you think that the Minnesota Timberwolves shoot too many threes? Because I just think that in the league, too many three-point shots are taken.
No doubt about it. You know, Anthony Edwards, you know, with his ability to attack the rim, there are times where he takes too many three-point shots. And I felt like last year, when they had their successful run, they changed their style just a bit where they could use that physicality in taking the ball strong to the basket. Because when you look at some of the teams that they're going to face at playoff time, those teams don't have shot blockers, but they love to shoot three-point shots. And the reason they've had great success against the Phoenix Suns as of late is because they don't play the same style that Phoenix wants them to play. Phoenix wants to be free and loose and shoot three-point shots. Where the Wolves decided, no, we're going to make it hard, we're going to make it rough, we're going to attack you at the rim, and we're going to make you defend. And those things the Phoenix Suns are not good at doing. So I think if the Wolves bring the right mentality to playoffs once again this year, you know, they could find some success also once again.
Who was the second best player on the Minnesota Timberwolves after Anthony Edwards?
Second best player? It might be Naj Reid.
Okay.
I mean, I know you're going to say – I know a lot of people might say Julius Randle.
I say Jaden McDaniels.
I was just about to mention his name as well. But I think Naj Reid brings so many different things to the table. I saw a difference in his game a year ago, especially against the Suns and against the Nuggets. You know, he's a three-point shooter, but he took the ball to the basket. He showed some post-up moves with his back to the basket, either going left or right. So I think the diversity in his game is there, but sometimes he falls in love with the three-point shot a little bit too much as well. But when he makes up his mind that he's going to the rim and be a different basketball player, to me, he just might be the second best player on that team.
Who was the, in all of your years, how many total years did you play in the league?
12.
You played 12. I mean, that's a great run. Who would you say was the toughest guy that you played with? Who was the of the enforcers?
No one. I had two.
Okay.
Chuck Robinson and Charles Oakley.
Wait. Who was it? You said? Did you say who was the first one?
Truck Robinson.
That name escapes me.
Leonard Truck Robinson. He's an old school guy, and he was my. You know, he was one of my first mentors in the league, and nobody messed with Truck. You know,
I'm looking at him right now. Oh, he don't look like no joke out of Tennessee State.
No, Truck wasn't no joke. Now, okay.
they got him. They got him at 6'7", 225.
Okay, you didn't fight Truck Robinson, okay.
And we know Oakley, man. Oakley, he letting young cats know right now. He's like, hey, you run up on me, run up, you get done up.
I'm going to tell you a story about Truck Robinson, and he may not want me to tell you, but I'm going to tell you anyway, okay?
All right.
I know he's not listening right now. He's out in Phoenix, Arizona, and he would be okay if I told you. You know, he used to be an assistant coach for the Sacramento Kings. And one day, DeMarcus Cousins decided that he was, you know, going to talk back to Truck Robinson, assistant coach. And DeMarcus Cousins got all up in arms and talking about he was going to fight his coach, right? And everybody's trying to hold DeMarcus Cousins back. You know what Truck Robinson said?
What?
I ain't going nowhere. I'm standing right here. Y'all can let him go.
did DeMarcus Cousins, did he run up on him?
No, he didn't.
Mm.
And this is Truck Robinson, an old grown man. He's probably in his late 50s, early 60s at this time, okay?
Yeah.
He said, I ain't going nowhere, okay? But now, I'm going to tell you who the toughest guy that nobody in the league wanted to mess with. And you won't believe this when I tell you this guy's name.
Who?
Calvin Murphy.
Calvin Murphy? The guard?
You didn't mess with Calvin Murphy.
Really?
Calvin Murphy knocked Sidney Wicks out, okay?
Tell me the story.
Calvin Murphy told Sidney Wicks, hey, man, hey, you got to stop picking me like that. You know, I don't mind you picking me, but get your elbows down, right?
Yep.
And Sidney Wicks, Sidney Wicks 6'9", you know, 240, 250, whatever. Calvin Murphy, what, 5'7", at the best? He hit Calvin Murphy in the back of his head with an elbow, man. Calvin Murphy turned around and gave him a sucker punch him and knocked him out in the game.
Oh, my goodness. Now you're going to have me looking this up on Google, man.
And so, no, but see, the great thing about Truck Robinson was a wonderful basketball player. And, you know, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. And I might be a little bit biased because he's been a great mentor and a great friend, you know, for a very long time. He and I still maybe talk two or three times a week,
mm-hmm.
but he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Wow, man!
Yeah, he's one of the few guys to ever average 20 points and 15 plus rebounds for a season.
Yeah, two-time All-Star, All-NBA first team back in 1978. Also led the league in rebounding that year.
At 6'6", 6'7". He wasn't even 6'7".
I mean, when you got a nickname and it's the truck, I mean, there's probably somebody you don't want to play with.
No, I mean, and, you know, one of the great guys in the history of the game, but, you know, he was no joke. He would tell you, you know, hey, let him go. I ain't going nowhere. I'm right here.
Oh, man. Well, Double T, man, I appreciate the time this evening. Thanks for catching up with me, and safe travels, man, and give me a shout when you get back to Minnesota.
I will do that, Lake. Thanks, man.
All right, take care. That's Double T, Trent Tucker, joining us here on The Lake Show. Wow. Truck Robinson said to DeMarcus Cousin, I want smoke. Let him go.
Yeah.
I like that.
Let's see where Boogie would have boogied there.
Oh, I like
would have boogied
that.
Away.
Should I tweet about that?
You should tweet about that.
Yeah.
Well, I was just looking up pictures of Trucker.
I did too. I got him up right here.
I mean,
I'm gonna leave him alone.
Yeah.
Look specifically. Look at the photographs of him in a Utah Jazz jersey. Yeah, okay. Nah.
You're good?
Yeah, I don't want no.
Yeah, smoke. I see. I
don't
see,
want no smoke.
Yeah, I see some pictures here, and I was like,
I don't want no smoke.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
He got a mean fro too. I like that. I totally like that. All right, 651-461-9226. Great stuff from Double T. At some point, well, let's get to the post-game reaction from the Twins. After we take a brief pause, we're going to hear from Chris Paddock. We'll also hear from Rocco Baldelli. We'll do that next year on The Lake Show.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
Let's go!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhance game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here, and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, unfortunately, right now, the Minnesota Twins are 0 for 4. Not as in batting, but in terms of, like, they're winless. Oh, not good. Today was a bad day at the office of Chris Paddock. This is a contract year for Chris Paddock. Chris Paddock today for the Minnesota Twins, terrible outing. He went 3 1/3 innings, gave up 6 hits, 9 earned runs, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts, 3 home runs given up on 89 pitches. He gave up more home runs than strikeouts. Not good. So let's get to the post-game reaction. Because I don't want to get into highlights of us giving up runs. You get a run. You get a run. You get a run. No. We're not going to do that. I don't feel good doing that. Let's hear from Chris Paddock post-game talking about how the White Sox had good at-bats to force hits and walks.
I think, you know, getting some guys to 2-strike counts and then putting together some good at-bats leading to walks, you know, honestly, the only thing I have is they put together some really good at-bats today. They didn't chase. Then whenever we were in zone, they were fouling it off or they put it in play. It's not like my command was off. I went back and looked at the outing. I was talking to Pete, talking to Vasquez. My misses were, you know, you're talking about a ball and a half off the zone. And with 2 strikes, that's where I want to be. They just didn't expand. And whenever I tried to bring that ball, whatever pitch it was, over the plate, they put a good bat to ball on it.
They just didn't expand. That kind of bugs me when he says that. I got to be honest, because he's making it seem as though, like, the White Sox had they rolled out one of the greatest lineups that he's ever faced, and they never expand on his stuff. Like, that just, I don't know, that bugs me.
I don't know why. You know, it's like the White Sox didn't expand. You know what? Well, good for them. Good for them. They had good plate discipline. They didn't chase pitches. And if you were off by a ball or a ball and a half, well, if it's not a strike and it's not called a strike. And that's kind of what I go back to when I was talking about it earlier. Like, I just felt like there's something about him where he didn't want to attack these guys. He didn't want to go after them. You shouldn't have to force them to chase, force them to miss things that are in the zone.
Yes. Are you that good pitching wise?
Your stuff, if you're confident in your stuff, throw it in the zone and then they'll miss. They didn't miss because they didn't chase. Give the White Sox credit for that.
Yep. All right, let's hear from manager Rocco Baldelli. Reason for pulling guys early, because he did pull Byron Buxton and Carlos Correa early.
Last thing I want to do is pull anyone out of a game in the fourth inning. The score was 9-0, I believe, and to keep them ready and in the lineup going forward, that's what we have to do. There's really no other explanation. I want them in the lineup tomorrow and the next day. And then when we get home for the home opener, I want them to be out there and playing. So the best way to do it is to get them off their feet when the score's, you know, getting close to being, you know, 10-0 game. I mean, we want to get them out.
Yeah, so I know that this came up earlier on Drive Time with DeRussia, and you had Dave Schwartz on. I'm in total agreement with Dan Cook and Jason DeRussia. I have no issue with him pulling those guys out down 9-0.
No.
In an early season meaningless game, I shouldn't say meaningless because all games matter.
You're going to be chasing the White Sox all season.
But the reality is this. You're down 9-0. Chris Paddock has nothing. And I'm not going to... The conditions aren't great. We're still basically in winter. Now, I'm not leaving him in there. I thought it was a great call.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's no different than, 9-0 in baseball after like three innings. That's like a football team being down by 30 points in the third quarter. Like, what are you... the risk is not worth the reward.
Yes.
Because if something happens, because we see it all the time. What happens to a guy if they get hurt in a meaningless game? And when you say meaningless, I understand what you mean with the outcome has pretty much been decided. If you end up making it competitive, great. But those two guys, do you need them for more than one game or do you need them for six innings in a game that you're already way behind the eight ball?
Exactly. All right, let's hear from Michael again. He's talking about, you know, his team right now, they just need to have better at-bats.
It's not as though the at-bats are good enough. There's a few guys that do look good at the plate, but as a group, we just got to tighten it up a little bit and, hit even more balls on the barrel and draw some walks and get on base. You got to force the issue sometimes. You can't just keep saying, we're having pretty good at-bats. You got to just take a game over at some point, just get a bunch of base runners and bring them around.
And last but not least, Rocco talking about his team just getting in their own way.
Kind of getting maybe a little bit in our own way, and you start thinking a lot when things don't go the way that you want. And today was a tough, obviously a very difficult ball game from the very beginning. Two in a row makes it probably twice as hard to deal with it. But I think what we really need to do more than anything is just play and not think. The more that you think, the more I think you get in your own way at times as a group. And again, I've said this a few times, and I know it's not the most enticing thing to hear. You know, we are four games in. It's been a challenging four games, no doubt. There's no way around it. But we have guys that they're going to hit their stride, and they're going to play great baseball. We have not done it to this point, but we have the guys to do it.
Tomorrow, first pitch, 6:40, the first night game for the Minnesota Twins in Chicago. Starting pitcher is Simeon Woods Richardson. All right, we'll take a break, look at the local weather, and then we'll come back. We'll talk some Final Four. We do that next. All right, right now on one of the televisions, I'm watching Paige Beckers and her UConn squad try to get past USC. USC clearly without Juju Watkins for the rest of the year with a torn ACL. UConn leads 14-11 with 22 seconds left, I think, in the first quarter. USC's playing good, though. USC was out to an 11-5 lead, but a 9-0 run for UConn. So we'll see if Paige can get to a Final Four. Again, she's been to one. Actually, she's been to more than one, right? She's been to two? I lose track. Because she was in the Final Four here when South Carolina won a few years ago. Last year, when they lost to Iowa, was that Final Four?
I don't know.
I can't remember the Final Four from last year. Because it was Iowa and South Carolina in the championship last year, and South Carolina ended up getting the victory. I can't remember at what point Iowa beat UConn. Because remember, that was the play in which there was a pick that was called on.
Oh, yes.
And then Paige wasn't able to get off the shot.
Yes.
So,
because that was a huge controversy with that call.
I can't remember if that was Elite Eight or if that was Final Four. But anyway, So, yeah, we'll see how things shake out tonight for Paige. But the Final Four has been solidified.
Yes, it was. It was NC State, UConn, Iowa, and South Carolina.
Last year was NC State, South Carolina,
UConn, and Iowa.
All right, so that was a semifinal. It was Iowa and – okay, gotcha. The Final Four has been solidified for the men. All four number one seeds made it to the Final Four. You've got Duke, Houston, Florida, and Auburn. All four number ones. First time since 2008 that has happened. Chris Tubbs, did you have all four number ones going?
I think I did, but I think I had a really weird way to get there. I'm always hesitant when...
No, I'm not talking about how did they get there.
Oh.
Did you have all four ones?
Yeah, I had all four there.
And I did too.
Yep, I had
all four ones.
Yeah.
And I hate doing that because I hate going chalk.
Yeah, that's just it. You figure that it is a statistical improbability for all four number one seeds to get there.
And I just don't like chalk. I don't like the favorites. Like, we like Cinderella. This was not the year for Cinderella.
No.
And quite frankly, I wanted to pick some Cinderellas to get to the Final Four. Couldn't do it. I just didn't think it was one of those years. Now, there were some good upsets that I picked. Ole Miss going deep. Mm-hmm. Arkansas going deep. But there were some swings and misses that I had that were really bad because I didn't have Texas Tech going far. I didn't have Purdue going far. So there were some upsets that I predicted that happened. Then I had some other ones that balanced it out.
Yeah, I think Arkansas was kind of a surprise because I think when you look at the Arkansas-St. John's matchup, Calipari.
I picked that.
And Patino, I think a lot of us were kind of just riding that Rick Pitino, you know, St. John's, a red storm, right? But, you know, at the end of the – you look at – I mean, Auburn had their hiccups at the end of the year, but they've been so damn good. Florida just somehow rolled through the SEC tournament. I thought the SEC – I don't want to say they were a little overrated, but I thought that somehow there were going to be some of those teams that were going to get picked off early. And you just saw that the SEC had a nice little run, and now you've got – an SEC semifinal, and they're guaranteed.
Yeah. You can't say that they were overrated because they got two teams in the Final Four.
Well, no, but I'm not
saying that you said that.
Yeah, I thought along the way that there were going to be a couple more that were going to be picked off, and they continued to march. And I think the Houston one kind of surprises me too because I don't.
Oh, that didn't surprise me at all.
Well, I mean,
arguably the best defensive team in the tournament.
It just seems like Houston, compared to the last few years, there just hasn't been as much buzz.
They got better offense this year. And remember last year, they were a game away from going to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Once they ended up getting hurt, Jamal Shedd.
Yes.
In that game, and he wasn't able to play in the second half.
Yeah, it was a huge injury for them.
Absolutely.
Because I know that my friends in Houston are absolutely giddy about it. And I mean, I think they can give Duke a run for their money, but I just
absolutely.
I think Duke right now, if it's Duke or the field with the other three, I mean, which way do you go?
Who did you pick to win the national championship at the start of the tournament?
Duke.
I did too.
Yeah.
I think Duke has the best balance of offense and defense.
Yeah.
But if Houston was to beat them, I wouldn't be surprised.
No. No.
I think you can make a case for any one of the four teams in the Final Four to win it.
I think you could. And I think that's what's going to make it fun because you see the VCU, the UMBC, or you have these fun stories, but it's like sooner or later you get to that point and you're like, this team's just going to get their ass kicked. And you kind of know it's coming, but I feel like you got four legit heavyweights. That, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the stories are nice, but you want to see the best team win the title. And I think these are the four best teams in college basketball going into the tournament they were and coming out of it, they certainly are.
Yep. All right, coming up next to close out the show, we're going to speak with a gentleman by the name of Steve Leibowitz. He is the founder and president of American Football in Israel. He joins us next year on The Lake Show.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Lake Show. The AFI is the governing body of all American football activities in Israel, including the Israel Football League and various flag football leagues. And they also are a member of the International Federation of American Football. And joining us now via the John Schuster Coal Banker Hotline is the founder and president of American Football in Israel. His name is Steve Leibowitz. He is joining us now here on the Lake Show. Steve, pleasure to have you on the show. How you doing?
And it's great to be here. You know, flag football is going to the L.A. Olympics, and we want to have a team there, and that's why we're here in Minneapolis this weekend.
Yes, yes, sir. And you guys are going to be at the Vikings TCO Performance Center, U.S. Junior Flag Football National Team, to host an international friendly against you guys. Just kind of talk about the popularity of football in Israel.
It's crazy popular. We've become the fifth most popular team sport in the country. Obviously, soccer and basketball, and then you've got handball and volleyball. American football has become number five. We have 20 tackle football teams around the country, high school and adult, and we have flag leagues, and our national teams in flag football are among the best in the world. Our men are currently ranked eighth in the world, and our U-17, the ones that are right now arriving in Minneapolis that are going to play the USA teams, are number one in Europe for the last 2 years. Unbeaten gold medalists in Europe.
That's awesome. And just kind of talk about you being the founder and president of all of this, because according to your bio, it says you joined by a group of American immigrant friends in 1988. You've guided this development of the sport in Israel.
We pirated the signal of Armed Forces Television so that we could watch games. And we built a little clubhouse in Jerusalem so we could watch the games live. It didn't exist until then. And we loved the game. We got together as we were watching NFL games, started talking about it, and decided let's form our own little league. And we started back then in 1988, so it's been quite a while with just a bunch of friends. And now we have 2,000 players all over the country. We have sports fields, and the sport has really been taking off. So, you know, I was at it for a long time just because I loved the game. When I moved to Israel, there was no possibility to play. And so I decided to make it happen.
Yeah, Steve Leibowitz, founder and president of the American Football in Israel, joining us here on the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. Tell me a little bit about, and this is a good guy to have a relationship with, talk about your relationship with Robert Kraft.
Well, Robert Kraft was a visitor in Jerusalem when the concierge at the hotel, who was a center in our little flag football league, recognized him. This was before internet. He just happened to know him. This was before they had won any Super Bowls. And he walked over to him and asked if he knew that there was football in Israel. And Kraft said, no, I didn't know. Have the guy in charge get in touch with me. So I went. He called me up. I went to my typewriter, typed him a letter, put it in an envelope, and mailed it to Boston, where his offices still were.
Wow.
And Mr. Kraft invited me to come over and meet and talk about it. The mayor of Jerusalem gave me this old, dilapidated field. And Mr. Kraft financed it. We built the field, and he's become the main sponsor of football in Israel over these last 30 years. But I do have to say that our second strongest sponsor is the Wolf family. Mark Wolf has been a tremendous help to us, and he certainly has been involved in facilitating our visit now, and he's also been helping us in our Olympic quest.
Well, see, Steve, you just know how to get the job done, man. Just being an editor-in-chief, you've been a reporter, a talk show host. You know how to cover things and get your goals accomplished.
30 years as a TV news editor, and the last year and a half, I have to say, have been some of the most difficult of my life professionally since the war started. Very tough times, and I'll tell you this. Our football players, 65% of them, of our adult players, had to serve in the Army Reserves, either in Gaza or in the North. We had no league last year because everyone was called to duty. And then, you know, even members of our national team were out of their, had to switch from one uniform to another uniform. So now they're back, they're ready to go, and we're ready to compete and hopefully get to the LA Olympics, which is our dream right now.
You know, Steve, I'm glad that you brought that up because you stole a little bit of my thunder. That was going to be my next question. Just the how much this war has taken a toll on everybody. I know that we all feel a certain way internationally about what we've seen and the images and the videos and stuff like that, but you're talking about people that actually are living it.
And I'm talking about guys that when they are able to finally get out of the Army, the first thing they do is come out to the football field to have the opportunity to get back to a couple of hours of normalcy. It's just been a very difficult year for everyone. Like I said, 65% of our guys, you know, had to go to the service, and some of our women players, as a matter of fact. We have flag football leagues for women. Some of our national team players are in the service as well. It impacted us a great deal last year, but now they're back. And for our high schoolers, the biggest problem was the coaches. We had lost 90% of our coaches who were doing service, and so we had to bring volunteer Christian coaches from the United States, football coaches, to come over and help us get through the season last year. But now we're back, and we're playing.
Now, is this your first time? I'm assuming this is probably not your first time coming to Minnesota, but I'll just go ahead and ask the question.
So I was here last year to try to get this ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
I came with Brett Novoselski, a former Viking player and a Bear player. He wanted me to emphasize Viking. He has been the spearhead of our Friends of the IFL movement in the United States over the last year. He came on a visit in the middle of the war to show his support. He's been organizing this visit. He brought me out here to meet all the Vikings folks to set this up, you know, a year later. And then in Chicago, he's also helping us out with a party over there because we need friends in the United States. And there are very, very few Jewish football players that have made it. Robert Kraft told me that, you know, a bar mitzvah is the time when a Jewish boy realizes he has more chance of owning an NFL team than playing on one. But, you know, Brett Novoselski is an exception to that rule.
That's awesome. Well, Steve, I'm so happy to have had this conversation with you and wishing you the best of luck. I wish I could be there on Thursday because I know that it's going on with your 17 and under boys national team on Thursday. Unfortunately for me, I have Minnesota Twins baseball. It's the home opener, so I can't be in attendance. But I'm so glad that Steven Silton, who's a regular guest on our show, he has his own segment, was able to bring us together.
And my regards to Steve for his help with us. And we're going to give the U.S. a run for their money in those games. Those are not – we're calling it friendlies, but that's going to be some very, very serious competition. The best flag football players in the world at age under 17.
Yeah. Hey, best wishes, Steve.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Yep, take care. That's Steve Leibowitz, the founder and president of American Football in Israel. And I'll say this. Thank you to Robert Kraft and thank you to the Wolf family for supporting a great cause. I cannot imagine being in the time of war, what it's like for those young men and women that are trying to divert their attention away into doing something with regards to a sports and athletic event. It's got to be tough. It's got to be tough. It's tough for us to see the images that we see. So,
and they're living it.
And they're living it every single day. All right, everybody, just to give you a quick update, tomorrow night we've got our first Twins evening game. First pitch at 6:40. We've got Simeon Woods Richardson on the mound for the Minnesota Twins. Tomorrow night, we've got final pitch. Final pitch.
It'll be a happy one.
I believe we win. We'll talk to you then right here on The Good Neighbor.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.